We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome on in. This is the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. It is the final NFL draft predictions. The NFL draft gets underway Thursday night. Goes all the way through Saturday afternoon. Mario and I are going to cover the entire first round. We're going to be looking at our final predictions here as the main event of the offseason gets underway. Let's go ahead and start the show. Welcome on in. This is the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, John McKechnie. That is Mario Puig. Today, we are getting into third string quarterback depth charts that we will be looking at.
The draft's tomorrow, Mario. Did you hear about that?
Oh, crap. And here I had a 2026 mock draft that I wanted to talk about instead, but I got to do this one.
Gunnar Stockton, number one. It's easy.
That's a good quarterback name. I can't argue with it. But for this draft, this 2024 NFL draft, I've got a lot of arguing I want to do about some of the quarterback stuff going on. Not that anyone cares what I think, but no one cared, John, either last year when we said, no, don't take Bryce Young, Carolina. And you were like, take CJ Stroud, Carolina. And I don't know, maybe someone should have listened.
Yeah, and then as a tradition, especially this time of year, day before the draft, all the big NFL draft media is talking about who they've talked to in NFL buildings, and they're getting fed all this information. Some of it probably actionable, some of it probably phooey, to say the least. Some smoke screens. I mean, we've mentioned several times in the lead up to the draft, we remember the Will Levis stuff, we remember the Bryce Young stuff, we remember Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield stuff.
We remember the Ryan Nassib stuff. The Tyler Wilson stuff. So yeah, we have a seasoned perspective on some of these things, and I think a lot of the news, the cycles of analysis nowadays kind of creates this like insular mania where all perspective of all sorts get lost. And we mean to, provide an antidote to that.
Yeah, we've only been building up like our information and scouting for, but months, if not years at this point. But, nugget of information that comes across at 6 o'clock Eastern time Wednesday night, we'll just, unravel all of it. But before we get into the meat of the show here, what we're going to do is run through the entire first round, just kind of quickly address the team needs and some potential fits for them. I do want to remind everyone that this podcast is brought to you by our good friends over at Prize Picks. But Mario, let's begin our kind of official first round mock. We're building it out, and we'll start with the first pick. Who are the Bears going to take?
Yeah, Caleb Williams. This is one of those, I think, obviously correct picks. It, would have been hard for the Bears to screw this up, and they're lucky that they get a quarterback that I think is clearly worthy of the top overall pick. So whereas the other teams that might yet take a quarterback after the Bears have a lot of thinking or maybe just worrying to do, Caleb Williams makes just a lot of obvious sense, and it's fortunate for him that the Bears, after tanking for 6 years or whatever it is, they have a pretty solid team structure around him, both with the offensive line and the pass catchers, neither of which you could say was the case for Justin Fields. And it's indeed a reason why we can expect Williams to do a lot better with the Bears than Fields did.
Yes, I think so. The odds are crazy on anything other than Williams going first overall. Like, we're talking like -10,000. So like, not even, you know, worth putting your money on it at this point. But the second overall pick is, you know, where things really do get interesting. And as it stands, Mario, I'm looking at the live odds for the second overall pick over at rotowire.com. I certainly encourage everyone to go to the NFL betting section over at rotowire.com, go to the futures section, go to the draft futures section. And we have markets for everything with multiple sports books as well. As we record currently, Jaden Daniels is -500 is the best price you're going to find to go second overall. So it appears that the linkage between him and Washington is fairly concrete at this point. It's hard to anticipate either Drake May or JJ McCarthy jumping over him. I think it would absolutely qualify as a surprise at this point for Daniels to not go second overall. I think Washington's absolutely staying there, and I think they're absolutely taking a quarterback, and I absolutely think that they are taking Jaden Daniels, right or wrong.
Yeah, it seems pretty well written in stone at this point. This is a pretty bad pick, if so, in my opinion. It's bad not just because, in my opinion, Daniels is clearly not worth the pick or a first rounder at all, in my opinion, but May, while not a flaw, Drake May, not a flawless quarterback prospect, better than most second quarterbacks in most drafts, I think. There's certainly exceptions, but we've seen first overall picks much worse than May. I mean, May's a better prospect than Bryce Young was last year. He's a better prospect than a lot of quarterbacks who, for some reason, were just given, I don't know, a more of a red carpet rollout, and Daniels included. It's not going to work, I'm sorry to say. I mean, I'd like to be wrong, but I'm not. It's just really obvious, I think, when you watch Daniels. Like, he is not an NFL passer, not as a starter anyway. I think his comp is basically just faster Tyler Huntley, and I don't care. You know, that's not a player that I'm paying for. Useful as it might be, I'm not paying for it. So it's also so strange to me that Adam Peters, the GM for Washington, hired away from San Francisco. Like, how do you take the lesson of the 49ers over the past 5 years and conclude, I need to take a Jaden Daniels quarterback second overall? You know, it's like, how about you take a quarterback late or something? You know, it's like your model is getting the cheap quarterback, or like the quarterback who is lifted up by yards after the catch and offensive line play. Now you're trying the inverse model. I don't think it's going to work. I think that guy is going to go down as a villain in Washington fan history, because not only did he give them the wrong quarterback in general, he gave potentially the Giants could go up and get Drake May. And I think the Vikings will, but if the Giants get Drake May and the Vikings take Jaden Daniels, then Peters isn't. He might have to like get exiled from Washington or something.
I suppose the only thing that's really shielding him at this point is that everyone's so happy in Washington that Dan Snyder's gone, that like maybe it'll you can pass. blow this pick. And no, people are ready for Washington to be competitive again in the nation's capital, and you get gifted this, you know, I think very solid to very good quarterback class, even beyond even beyond Caleb Williams, and you pick door three, and it ends up being wrong when you absolutely didn't have to. But the odds and all reports seem to point to Daniels being the pick there for Washington. Moving on to the third pick, Patriots. I think they should take Drake May under this particular scenario with Williams and Daniels off the board. I like McCarthy. Like we're both on the record saying that, you know, we can understand at the very least the appeal. It's not like he's an ironclad good lock to be a success, but I think everything that he put on film during his time at Michigan, what he's done through the pre-draft process, I think is enough to sell me on him. But I still think that May, the more accomplished passer, the more accomplished quarterback prospect, period. I think that it would be kind of foolish for New England to be posed with that, with the option between May and McCarthy and go McCarthy.
I agree. I think as much as I generally like McCarthy, he's still not the category of prospect that I want to take this high either. Drake May is, however, and the difference to me, this might be short-sighted. I mean, this is something that could change in 1 year, obviously, if McCarthy had played another year at Michigan. But Drake May had been under heavy fire in that North Carolina offense. Like the offense basically gave him no cover. He was the Josh Allen of the North Carolina offense, and he didn't have a whole lot of help at receiver, whereas McCarthy, he's passed every test that's been put in front of him, but he has not so much as even taken a number of the tests that May has taken and passed already with much less help than McCarthy had at Michigan. So the hypothetical that is, I think, interesting to consider is just, what if McCarthy played another year, and what if he, instead of 23 times a game, threw it 35, and what if his numbers just got better, and what would the narrative look like then? It would take 4 weeks, John, of play like that for McCarthy to just right like that be the number one overall favorite for the next year, and he would probably be the pick too. So it's and I think it comes down to, like, what level of faith do you have that McCarthy can become that player if given the chance to pass that test? And I don't personally feel like taking, you know, the top three price to find out, especially if Drake May is on the board. And I wouldn't, even if Drake May weren't on the board, it's like I'd rather let some other team take the risky quarterbacks and pay a high price to take them while I go, you know, quarterbacks don't matter. Get the offensive line, get the running game rolling, get the defense rolling at a much cheaper price. But yeah, it seems like as much as McCarthy shouldn't fall very far, if May goes third here, I don't know how likely it is that the Giants take McCarthy at six. And if the Giants don't take McCarthy at six, then I guess we're talking maybe the 11th pick where Minnesota is. I don't know if the Raiders at 13 are a candidate to trade up at all, but there is a lot. All of this is to say there's a lot at stake with whatever New England chooses to do here. I think they could trade back with the Vikings, who would definitely be pursuing May. But I don't know. It's a tough call from my perspective as to whether they should take that trade, which would be the 11th pick and the 23rd pick, and then maybe a little more, because I just don't know if you should assume you're going to get a quarterback prospect of May's caliber within your slotted draft pick. So tough questions, I think, are ahead for the Patriots and the Vikings.
I think so too. And I mean, let's keep it rolling in that same vein, because I think the Patriots will stand pat and take a quarterback. I'll be shocked if they trade back. They, like you said, you know, they could use lots of help, but I think getting a quarterback of May's caliber, the smart play under this particular scenario. Now, Mario, I will say that I've caved a little bit. I'm not so sure that the Cardinals stay at four, because that once we have the top three quarterbacks off the board, there is kind of that two horse race between the Vikings and the Giants to move into that number four slot. And I think that, you know, at once the Vikings are able to offer two first round picks to this Cardinals team, but that would move Arizona back to 11, whereas, and therefore they either have to move back up to get one of those blue chip receivers, one of the big three, or they miss out on those guys completely under, you know, most likelihoods. So I think the Giants, you know, they have a good selling point in the sense that Arizona would only have to move back two picks. They accrue some additional draft capital, and they still end up in all likelihood getting Marvin Harrison or at least Malik Nabers or Roma Dunze. So I could see it going a couple different ways here, but I do kind of expect at this point, maybe I'm drinking the draft rumor Kool-Aid a bit too much, but I think Arizona is putting this pick up for sale.
I got to ask, what was the latest on reporting wise on the Cardinals in the fourth pick? Because I hadn't seen.
I think it was mostly just like they are getting peppered with calls. Like that, they're definitely going to be listening to offers. Whether they take them or not is a totally different story. I think it depends on who you ask and who they've talked to. So I don't want to play a huge game of telephone with it, but right. I think it's open as far as Arizona moving off it, because I think that thirst for a quarterback is going to get pretty extreme once the first three are off the board, and it becomes that two horse race in all likelihood, we think, but between Minnesota and the Giants to get, you know, in this particular scenario, JJ McCarthy.
Yeah. So the one thing or a couple things that makes the Cardinals, I think, still the favorite for Harrison in my mind is that they have a fully staffed roster already. Like they have, or as of recently anyway, had as many players under contract as any team in the league. And yet they had a lot of cap space. And this is after even in free agency, they signed something like four defensive starters. So I just feel like the way that they handled free agency, getting solid, you know, 50 grade starters at, you know, like Justin Jones at defensive tackle. They added some Sean Murphy Bunting at corner. Like those to me are picks that you make, or sorry, signings that you make when you're setting up to take best player available in the draft. And again, particularly given the amount of cap they have and the amount of players they already have under contract, I feel like they don't have that much use for depth, which is what they would be accepting in trade for that fourth pick if they move back. They still have needs, of course, and if they somehow move back and then, I don't know, trade back up for Harrison, or I certainly think Odunze would be more than worth it. I guess there's a possibility there, certainly. I just think it's rare that you get a really easy slam dunk blue chip prospect that you can identify as a foundational piece like you can with Harrison, especially when they don't actually really need to reach for any kind of need. You know, it's just it's like they need stars now rather than role players. And I think they risk becoming not quite the same. But you, I'm sure, remember, John, how when the Cardinals traded back from the 10th pick back in 2003 or whatever it was, and the Ravens traded the 10th and 17th pick. Two first round picks is what they traded to the Cardinals. The Cardinals let Terrell Suggs, an Arizona State star, go to the Ravens, where he was, you know, almost like a Hall of Fame level player.
Defensive player of the year in 2011. I remember.
Yeah. And with those two picks, the Cardinals took Calvin Pace and Bryant Johnson, who, you know, just nobodies. Who? So there's this, I think they should remember that tale. And consider, like, are we letting Terrell Suggs get away again? Not that I consider Odunze a poor trade off like Calvin Pace was. It's just a level of getting cute that I don't know if there's a clear enough payoff for them. However, yeah, if somebody makes them an offer they can't refuse, then I guess that just changes everything.
I love the logic that you have when it comes to Arizona, and that kind of snaps me back in. You know, again, I still think that there's just that possibility that
the phone is open. Yeah. It's not like they unplugged it or something.
Like it's whether it's pragmatic or not, you know, to acquire more picks for the depth, like you said, they're pretty set there. They have, you know, what is on paper right now, like one of, if not the worst receiving cores, if they were to roll it out for week one right now. So, you know, the answer is staring them right in the face, but it's a matter of, like, do they get too cute? But I mean, like, last year, you know, they were able to move back with Houston and still kind of get their guy in Paris Johnson. So it makes me wonder if this is a GM front office regime that likes to wheel and deal a little bit. But I think Harrison's the smart pick, but my expectation at this stage is that Arizona moves off of it. But I think receiver, no matter what, is kind of where they end up.
They need at least one. Yeah, they should take two in the first, because they have two first rounders, a 35th overall pick, and then three third rounders. So, yeah, they should get another receiver in the first 50 picks, I think.
Yeah, they absolutely need to. Maybe two. Let's go to the Chargers. I can't figure them out. I can't figure what the Chargers are going to do out for the life of me. It certainly makes sense, and it marries up with the Harbaugh aesthetic to build the trenches. And, you know, Harbaugh said this week, you know, we view it as we have the first pick in the draft because they expect the first four picks to be quarterbacks. I don't know if you saw, I don't even know if I want to derail the podcast by mentioning the idea of Justin Herbert getting traded. We're just going to leave that one alone. I think that's like the tipping point of like, we need the draft to start. This is too much. But what are they doing here? What do you think?
So Daniel Jeremiah just this morning was tweeting about how, quote, everybody, I don't know how serious he meant his tone to come across as, but he said something like, everybody's trying to trade up for a tackle. And if that's true, then I think that might kind of throws a wrench in my assumptions around the Chargers, because what I assumed the Chargers were going to do was try to trade back from the fifth pick, basically. Just be it the Jets at 10, be it the Vikings at 11 or whatever that pick is. I thought the Chargers wanted to move back just point blank, just no questions asked. I thought they wanted to do that. But I assumed if they had done that, they would have been pursuing J.C. Latham at the 11th pick, the Alabama right tackle. And now if, quote, everybody's trying to trade up for a tackle, then that makes it a much riskier question for the Chargers at 5 to move back, because if they move back from 5 to 11 and the Titans, if Joe Alt goes, whatever, Joe Alt could go 5th to the team trade. If it's the Jets trading from 10 to 5, they could be targeting Joe Alt, the Notre Dame tackle. And if Alt goes 5, then J.C. Latham could go 7 to the Titans, who also might be looking. Joe Alt has been presumably, you know, I think most people projected the Titans to take him if he's there. But if he's all of a sudden gone at 5, then what do the Titans do? Do they switch to an entirely different position? I think it would make perfectly good sense for the Titans, and maybe in a way it'd be the right pick for the Titans to take Odunze. But just because DeAndre Hopkins is 32, Calvin Ridley's 30, Trey Burks, I don't know what that is. Don't know what's going on there. So I think a player like Odunze would be the best available player pick, but teams don't necessarily work that way. And the Titans do have a need at right tackle that I didn't even know this. Apparently they're looking at moving that right tackle, Dylan Raddins, to guard. And if so, yeah, it's 7. How are you going to tell the Titans not to take Latham? And then if you're the Chargers, you get up at 10. What are you taking? I like the Washington tackle. A lot of people call him a guard, Troy Fontenot, but admittedly, you're getting into like almost a borderline like niche category with him. Whereas I think Latham at right tackle is a blue chip, and Joe Alt at left tackle is a blue chip, and they want a blue chip tackle. They don't want just some guy. Not that I consider Fontenot just some guy. So whereas I didn't consider it a serious possibility recently, I think the Chargers might just take Alt or even Latham at 5. I love Latham. I just point blank, like, don't really understand a lot of the criticisms about him, but it would seem reckless to me to take Latham over Alt when even I, as a Latham fan, would not recommend him at left tackle.
So, fun fact, did you know that Latham, Wisconsin native?
He's from Waukesha, Wisconsin. I did not know that. That is crazy. Right? I guess they got those Southern football schools just go looking up north for kids to
their big guys,
families to come south. Yeah. You gotta envy him. You don't want to go to Waukesha. It's not a place.
You'd rather go to IMG Academy in Bradenton, Florida.
Yeah, even in Wisconsin, there's so many better places than Waukesha.
It's true. It's just a nice little fun fact that I found. But either way, we're thinking Chargers. Now it seems like there's a little bit more pressure on them, because the idea that if they get cute, they trade back, they could lose out ultimately on one of those premier tackle prospects in this class. Whereas, you know, as it stands at 5, they should have their pick of the litter. Quick question from our listener, Eric, before we get to the Giants quickly. More likely to get traded on draft night, Higgins or Brandon Ayuk?
Well, I haven't looked that closely at either of these cases, especially not in the last couple days. But I thought the last indication from the Bengals was that they're basically, they're just kind of not really
planning on moving Higgins. Like, I thought I'd even read something that Higgins kind of like backed off a little bit, but
yeah, I thought so too. So my inclination based on that alone, I think, is Ayuk's more likely, but I'm still not certain that it happens.
He's pushing it more vocally, and yeah, there's a lot more. There's drama there with that Amon Ross extension for both of those teams, but it just seems to me like Ayuk's being a little more aggressive, and Mia something or other, the Jacksonville area beat, I always forget her last name. I think even like a month ago had mentioned that the Jaguars might have been talking to the 49ers about Ayuk. So Jags 49ers has already been a suggested link as far as Ayuk goes, whereas with Higgins, I don't even know of I don't know if anybody's saying like this team might do it.
Right. So yeah, I'm not sure.
I would say Ayuk is this. Sorry for the long answer. I'd say Ayuk.
I think so too. Seems like that relationship is a tad frostier at this point. Giants. All right, we got four quarterbacks and a tackle off the board. What do the Giants do?
They're in a difficult spot, I think, if they don't like McCarthy. If McCarthy is at six and the Giants don't like him, conventionally you'd like to think in that position like, oh, we'll get some other team to trade up and give us a bunch of, you know, assets to trade back. But I don't know if McCarthy is that caliber of quarterback prospect, slash I don't know if enough teams are interested to that degree in him in that range. So I think in a way the Giants, I know I just said that McCarthy should probably be more like an early second round pick, but the Giants are maybe one of the very few teams that are in a difficult enough position that I think they can rationalize taking McCarthy, just because Daniel Jones is terrible. They have to release him as soon as they can. Drew Lock, God bless him. I hope it works well. Likeable player, but he's more of a golden retriever than a quarterback. I mean, it's just there's not much basis to think that's going to work either. So Daniel Jones, just an absolute, you know, he's an anchor around their neck, and they got to get rid of him as soon as they can. But maybe it's not actually fair or even like smart for the team drafting McCarthy to give him whatever roster the Giants have after they finally shake Jones's contract. Like, you know, look at the Bills getting rid of Stephon Diggs, an actually good player, and look at how they had to eat like $30 million right there. So If you're giving McCarthy a redshirt year and then you're telling him like, okay, now fix the Giants. Here's the catch. We just lost $67 million on the cap because we had to eat Daniel Jones's insane contract. That's a good way to set him up for a bust script, right?
So, yes.
At six, I don't know. It's tough. They've really cornered themselves with that stupid Jones contract, but they should try to trade back if at all possible. If they can't get a Drake May level quarterback, or they're oddly roadblocked at tackle, where you would say, okay, just take Joe Alt then. It's like, okay, well, what are we going to do about Evan Neal's contract? You know, and Andrew Thomas is not going anywhere. He's actually good at left tackle. So I think in a way they should just trade back and sort of take whoever the best player is at that point. Maybe they trade back with the Jets at 10 for the Jets to, I don't know, do something. The Troy Fontenot, I think, in a trade down would make a lot of sense, both because he could play tackle or guard if they are jammed at tackle at this particular time. And maybe even like a corner. Maybe if the Giants can trade back to like 10, where maybe with the Vikings, some other team in like the 12 range, maybe they take a corner. But at six, if they stay there, they should, in my opinion, take Roma Odunze. And I guess the conventional bet if they're taking a receiver would be that they take Malik Nabers from LSU. But I like Nabers. I think he has big upside. I don't really share any of the criticisms about him, but him running a high 4.4 at the LSU pro day, that's to me a tiebreaker with a player like Odunze, because Odunze just is faster, even though he's 12 pounds heavier, and we know he's really skilled. Not just that, the Giants already have at least two players who are already kind of like Nabers, and Darius Slayton and Jalen Hyatt. So
Right.
Who's going to actually run a slant for that team? You know, they don't have anyone.
You got to have guys that can catch it, you know, short and underneath, because we know that Daniel Jones isn't landing those deep shots anyway. So,
yeah. Oh, man, they're trying to make that off. They're trying to keep that offense like afloat. But just what's the fix here? Subtracting Saquon Barkley. Now what? This is your plan. What are you going to do? I don't know what
like,
they're going to do.
I'm glad that Saquon Barkley is free and like, in a good offense now. But like at the same time, like.
It's going to get worse.
The good folks who do the primetime scheduling do not clockwork orange us again, like they did with the Giants last year, where they were on national TV countless times. And it was painful. It was painful. But either way, the Giants.
Neighbors are a doonze if they can't get Drake May.
Okay.
Oh, in a trade up that would require.
Trade up. Yeah. Got it. Understood. Titans, we kind of covered already a bunch of needs, but tackle or receiver probably chief among them. And again, pretty good spot to be in that sense. If you're
Alter Latham, yeah, either one of them's going to go there.
That's the way. Falcons, 8. I think that it makes sense for them to go defense, but like, is that too rich for a Dallas Turner pick, do you think?
Turner in this edge class in general are kind of weird to me, because the production at a glance is really great, including, you know, age adjusted production with Turner, the Alabama guy. His workout at the combine was awesome. You know, the normally skill is indicated in production, tools are indicated in the athletic testing. It's A grades for Turner in both cases, but he doesn't seem to be held in quite the regard that most edge prospects of his dimensions and production would normally get. Like, I feel like a guy like Turner, you know, running in the 4.4s, pushing 250 and being the top pass rusher for 3 years at Alabama, that normally gets you the Will Anderson treatment, right? And Will Anderson was not anywhere near the athlete that Turner was. Better prospect for skill related reasons, I think. But it seems to me that Turner, despite having like a really clean looking profile, might slip a little bit. I think all these edge guys are maybe not that they're all going to slip, but someone might get pinched out from the market a little bit and be a surprise faller, because I personally have some trouble separating after Turner guys like Jared Verse, Chop Robinson, these other guys. So I could see defensive end not quite being the, you know, the 8th, the 9th, the 10th spot. I think it might more so be in the 15 onward, because it looks like corner is going to get going around 12, 13. So if we're getting all these tackles going in this range, and you know, receivers, then I think it makes sense for the Falcons to take a receiver there and target defense after that if they can. I was just saying how I don't like Neighbors that much for the Giants. I think Neighbors would be perfect for the Falcons, absolutely perfect stylistic complement to Drake London, who I think is awesome, but you know, he can't access the depths downfield. He's not the yards after the catch threat that Neighbors is, and even though Neighbors is average build at 6'2", it's like London being bigger kind of provides a nice balance between the two of them. It's like you can hurt a defense a lot of pretty much every way possible between the two of them. So that would be a great pick. But if Neighbors isn't there, I also love Odunze for the Falcons. I know Odunze stylistically a little more in common with London, but he's probably a step faster than London, probably a little bit more of a downfield threat than London. And you know, worst case scenario, if I have to have two Drake Londons, fine. I don't care. I know, yeah, I normally,
like, you got the Monstars out there at that point. Those two and Kyle Pitts.
Yeah. And I know I mentioned how I'm a stickler about like the downfield speed and making the defense space itself. But Drake London wins one-on-ones so well, and Odunze wins one-on-ones so well, that you'll always be moving the chains at the very least. Like, that offense will not go cold with those two starting receivers, you know, like maybe they'll have to grind out some games against really good defenses, but they're built to do it. So yeah, Neighbors or Odunze, I think, should be the pick for the Falcons. As to what they will do, I have no idea. If they took Turner, that'd be fine. If they took Dallas Turner at defensive end, that'd be fine. But I think they should try, especially since they're paying so much and Kirk Cousins is so old, like, make sure that investment works for you, and you make that investment a lot safer if you get Odunze or Neighbors out there with him.
That's it. Yeah. Well said. So I know Falcons fans, I think that they would kind of like it, that they're just used to rolling their eyes at whatever the Falcons do, and like, fair enough. But I think continuing to add to the offense, it would be a really interesting wrinkle. And if one of those top three receivers is available, I'd like that. I'd like that play. Otherwise, I think they have to go edge, because I think for the most part, otherwise, they're in decent enough shape to where need and fit marry up well enough for Dallas Turner to be the guy there if they don't want to go receiver. Bears, their second pick of the first round, picking nine. I guess we're thinking at this point that maybe one of the receivers is still available, but probably not.
Odunze might be there. And if he's there, I think that's an easy pick for the Bears. I think their pick is a little complicated if Odunze and Neighbors are both gone. But Keenan Allen, well, I should have looked. He's 32, I assume. He's going to turn 32, something like that, I assume.
He's a rookie in like 2013, so... Yeah.
And DJ Moore is, of course, great, but kind of expensive. So if you're going to try to add more star power among your route runners for the Bears, and if you're going to try to maximize the rookie contract window production of Caleb Williams, then Odunze is just a total no-brainer at nine, in my opinion, because it's getting you another DJ Moore caliber receiver prospect, but he's on a rookie contract at the same time Caleb is. And it's like, how it seems to me like it's very rare that teams get the chance to put together that level of, you know, that sum of talent at once in the salary cap era, to have like DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, Roma Dunze, and Cole Kmet, along with probably a solid, if not improved, offensive line from last year. That seems to me like that just seems the most efficient way to make Caleb Williams the best that he can be. So if it's not Odunze, I guess maybe that's that reasoning I was just using for Odunze could apply to Brock Bowers. It's just, I would like Brock Bowers on the Bears a lot better if Allen weren't already there. Because Allen, especially as he gets older, you're going to want him more and more in the slot. He's already a primarily like a slot guy. So Brock Bowers makes a lot of sense, even if Cole Kmet is there, if Brock Bowers is the slot receiver in effect, or like the second tight end, whatever you want to call him.
Right.
If Allen's there, I mean, I guess you can make Allen just run outside and Bowers can still rake in the slot, but then you're making Allen a little worse. So it's not an obvious call to me. I think Odunze isn't. If Odunze is gone, it's not an obvious call to me, but if Odunze is there, it is obvious in my opinion.
It wouldn't shock me if they trade this one, but I don't know who's trading up and for what exactly. But, you know, I could see them, you know, obviously taking Williams with that first pick. I could see Byron Murphy on their radar out of Texas.
Yeah, good defensive point.
Tackle. Because they might reason that the offense is good enough right now, like on paper, to where, you know, fix the defense a little bit, get it a little bit shored up. And, you know, if you want to continue to add to the offense, I think that there are still going to be plenty of guys available in the second, even third round that can help this team next year.
Turner is there too. So yeah, Murphy or Turner, maybe if they don't go Odunze,
if they go defense, because corner's still a bit rich for the.
They're a little. They're kind of loaded there, or not? I don't know. They have prior investments that they're not exactly trying to write off yet.
Yeah, so I think good call on either skill position or defensive line, one way or the other. If the Bears keep that pick at nine. Keep rolling here. But before then, we do have a message from our friends at Prize Picks. Prize Picks, everyone knows it. Prize Picks is the best way to get in on the action on sports in more than 30 states across the country. Prize Picks is really simple to play. I can make my picks and submit my entry in less than 60 seconds. You just pick more or less on two or more player stats and watch the winnings roll in. For instance, you know that there is a ton of Prize Pick stuff for the NFL Combine. Really enjoyed their selections on that. Fastest 40, 40 times for, you know, all different types of positions. Obviously, that we got the spring sports going on with the playoffs. So NBA, NHL, name it, they've got Prize Picks for it. And you can make those picks extremely quickly. And again, watch those winnings roll in. Quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, and an enormous selection of players and stat types are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Download the app today and use code ROTOPOD for a first deposit match up to $100. That's promo code ROTOPOD for a first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy over at Prize Picks.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All right. Jets. Gangrene. Picking 10th. What do they need? What do they do?
Right. So, mentioning before the Daniel Jeremiah comment about everybody trying to trade up for a tackle, if we're talking in the top 10, the team trading up for a tackle would have to be the Jets, I think. And it would make sense to go after Joe Alt, I think. The Jets, you know, I don't think Joe Douglas is a good GM or anything, but kind of for the same reason the Bears have a solid roster, you know, tanking for upwards of 5 years, like, well, you should have a pretty good roster eventually, and the Jets have that, but they have this imminently, you know, slamming shut window, if they have the window at all. And I think Douglas knows that if that window slams shut without a Super Bowl appearance, then he's gone. So trading up for a real blue chip makes sense to a team in their position, and they have a notable void at left tackle. So Alt is, I think, the pretty clear left, like, lead left tackle in this draft. And if the Jets want him, they'll have to trade up, I think, with the Chargers at 5 to get him. And if they do that, then I think I like that. But if they stay at 10, particularly, you know, if the Bears don't take Brock Bowers at 9, then I think at 10, if the Jets stay there, it either has to be him or they have to be resigned to taking one of those somewhat lesser coveted offensive tackles. And I guess by those, I'm thinking the Fautanu would be my pick, but I think what a team like them, they might take Fautanu. I never made up a mnemonic device for this, but I should have. Fautanu is good. Fautanu is bad. Fautanu is, I think, who the Jets might take at 10 if they don't take Bowers and if they can't trade up for Alt.
Boy, Fautanu and Caleb Williams, two graduates of Gonzaga College High School in Washington, D.C.
Oh,
so
I didn't know that.
One of the co-hosts on this show. So they played together in high school, and they're both going to end up being top 10 picks potentially. Obviously, one of them being the number one pick. That's nuts. That's a fun little draft nugget there for you. But I could also see if Bowers is available, I think continuing to add to the weaponry for Aaron Rodgers would make some sense. But yeah, I mean, if they do feel inclined to trade up for tackle, then they will certainly have the opportunity to do so. Some of the best ones will probably still be on the board, especially if they move up. I just kind of felt like they did enough to maybe signal this offseason with their free agent moves that, between Tyron Smith, who's banged up. You made that point on Twitter.
Oh, my bad.
Yesterday. And Morgan Moses as well, who I thought played a competent brand of right tackle last couple of years in Baltimore. But you want to
probably won't trade up for actually, my bad. They're probably not going to trade up for Alt then. So in that case, I believe no one is actually trading up for a tackle in the top 10.
Yeah. All right.
But Brock Bowers. Bowers.
Fooey on the flurry of trade ups for tackle. We're calling the bluff on that. Is Minnesota going to make that pick at 11, you think?
If the Patriots are unwilling to trade down from the third pick, then I don't know if it's a lock, but I don't know if it's a lock that the Vikings stick with quarterback, but if they did, then they'd have to target McCarthy. And I don't know if they would trade up to 6 with the Giants to do that. I don't know if they'd try to wait it out and hope he falls to 11. He might not. I have no idea which way that would go, but I think if McCarthy fell to 11, the Vikings would probably take him there.
Yeah, that's a layup. Yeah.
Since they have the second first rounder, they don't have to, it doesn't feel like they're reaching exactly because they're, getting 2 first rounders, and it's 11 is a very different question than, 3 or 2 or whatever else. So yeah, at 11, if they're still there and if May is gone at 3, then I guess I would expect the Vikings to either trade to 6 to take McCarthy or McCarthy would be there at 11 and they'd take him.
Yeah, that's the interesting wrinkle here. The more that I think on it is, once you get past the Giants or past the 6th pick, there isn't anyone really that's going to be moving up ahead of the Vikings to
maybe McCarthy. Maybe Raiders.
Other than them,
I don't see the Broncos don't have the ammo to do it. The Raiders aren't exactly flush with ammo themselves, but it's like the Broncos are just, they have to trade back. It's the other way around. They cannot stay at that pick. Anyway, we'll get to that.
Yes, we will. But, I think Minnesota just almost on or by virtue of them having those 2 first round picks this year to work with, I think that they're going to do everything that they can to get a quarterback.
I think they're going to offer the Patriots something irresponsible for May, and it's going to be really tough for the Patriots to turn it down. But yeah, they've cornered themselves. Kwesi cornered them into taking a quarterback at this point once Cousins walked.
Right. They absolutely have to. So I don't know. Side note, do you think anything comes of this Falcons tampering thing, like in the immediate, like anything that, like, do they?
I don't know, man. I don't even know what tampering is. It's like I think everybody's tampering all the time. It's like
I think it's funny that there is like literally a legal tampering period. Like that's what it's called.
Not even a euphemism.
corruption
and with corruption in the U.S. It's like they call bribery lobbying. They make up a new word that makes you think it's not what it actually is. And in this case, they're just like, can't think of anything better than good tampering. Let's call it.
Yeah.
Like, tampering, but it's okay.
Based tampering. A college example that was in the news this week is, in an era just before NIL and all this, like Herm Edwards still somehow managed to like get Arizona State in like as much trouble as like humanly possible for a head coach to do. It's like, just figure it out. Like, how do you screw this up? It's pretty much allowed to
Herm's old fashioned and he uses the money, the bags with the dollar sign drawn.
That's
on
right.
Them, and you're always going to get funny looks when you walk around with those.
It's unfortunate. We need to normalize the money bags once again. But nonetheless, Vikings, very interesting what they're going to do. I think, the Cardinals, And I suppose the Giants are like the three teams that I think could really change the entire complexion of this first round, or at least the first 15 picks. Denver, like you said, I think is a team that has to trade back. They don't have a second round pick right now. And basically all the quarterbacks are going to be gone. They need a quarterback. So they will need to move back and kind of hold their nose and take one of Michael Penix or Bo Nix is my expectation. But other than that, they're just
Bo Nix wherever they're taking him.
He is the favorite, I believe, to be drafted by the Broncos right now.
Yeah,
the Broncos are the favorite team. Yeah,
12 seems a little high, but hell, I mean, it makes no sense to me, obviously, that Daniels is going second. So if the world is such that Daniels must go second, then I guess even I am kind of like, sure, why not let Nix go 12? Who cares?
Yeah, exactly. On the Raiders side, I feel like it's easy to you know, say this about the Raiders, like that they love their fast receivers. Xavier Worthy set the combine record. Is he a possibility for them, or are they set just enough at receiver to where that they start to address corner? I think corner would make sense. You got Antonio Pierce. Quarterback doesn't really make sense at this juncture for them. Like, I think they can kind of patch it together with, like, Gardner Minshew is like the the poster boy of just kind of patching it together at quarterback. So him and Aiden O'Connell can certainly get them to, I don't know, 7 wins next year or something, and we're back to where we started from. But
they're not shooting for the moon exactly. It's okay. Yeah.
No. So I think corners probably, like, I think Terrion Arnold, something like that, it would probably be the play for them. Quinyon Mitchell as well out of Toledo, Mac legend, would also be they could start the corner market. They have their choice. So I'll say
Terrion Arnold. Yeah.
All right. On to the Saints. Kind of a funky one to figure out in their own right. They need some help on the defensive interior.
They need a left tackle, though. They straight up they have like a question mark at left and right tackle, actually. They need two tackles because we don't even know if Ramchick's going to play again. So, or at least the last thing, I guess I should have checked that this morning before guessing wildly. But they need a left tackle at the very least. Like, Trevor Penning, he's just a goon. Like, he's just like a penalty minutes guy. Like, he just can't do anything helpful. So left tackle, they have nothing. If the Penn State tackle, Fashanu falls, then I think he'll be, they'll run up to the podium to make that pick. If he's gone, then even though I think the Washington one is better, then the Washington one in that scenario probably would still be on the board, and he might not be their first pick, but it's like, you got to take Fautnu, the Washington guy, over the likes of Tyler Guyton, in my opinion. Maybe, I don't know, maybe Mims can get up there. That would be a little bit of a reach, but if they're set on a left tackle with, like, you know, 6'5 plus, Fautnu at 6'4 would get kind of just crossed off on that basis, and they're desperate. They truly need to take a left tackle with their first pick. They don't have any choice.
Yeah, I guess they let Andrews Pete go this offseason, and that tackle. This is a good draft for them to like get out of their own way, essentially, when it comes to the Saints. Indianapolis.
So the Colts at 15, I think, have reason to entertain a trade back. If there are teams trading up for tackles, then they at 15 would be in a pretty prime spot maybe to move back, because they're not, I don't think anyway, that they're going to be in that tackle market. That Central Michigan German one at left tackle, I guess, is working okay. But if they're not looking to replace him, I think we can rule out them trying to replace Braden Smith at right tackle. So if tackle's the hot position at the fifth, by the time the 15th pick comes up, the Colts might move back. And especially if they move back, I kind of like the Colts as a team to take maybe Xavier Worthy, the Texas receiver. But if they had to take him at 15, it'd be a little bit, you know, you could tell it'd be a bit of like speed desperation kind of thing. But sometimes it works out, and that offense needs, or ideally would have, a guy like him. I think, you know, the way that you create tension for a defense with a quarterback like Anthony Richardson is you leverage that rushing threat to make them play, you know, bigger and more at the line of scrimmage and have a more of a defensive tendency to crash downward when they see those run setups. And you want to play off of that by stressing them in the other direction just as violently with Xavier Worthy's speed. It gets a defense just kind of almost dizzy having to tilt back and forth like that, you know, always trying to prepare, like always trying to be on alert for the sign that like, oh, we got to rush to hit Richardson and the run contain. And the just as big of a concern, like, where's Worthy though? I got to keep an eye on Worthy. It's like, you just end up kind of, you either have to choose one blindly and hope that you're right and instead of extremely wrong, or you just kind of end up stuck, you know, waiting for something to develop and trying to play it safe. And that creates a lot of space, not just for Richardson, but for Jonathan Taylor too. So Xavier Worthy, I think, would be, if we're talking first round player, offensive players, other than the elite three receivers and Bowers, Worthy would be the guy for the Colts that makes the most immediate impact, I think, at that point. But if Bowers would be point blank the best impact if they could somehow get him. I don't believe he'll fall to 15.
I don't either. And they've drafted so many dang tight ends at this point. I mean, none of them very good and none of them particularly expensive either, but I don't know. I think that they probably are more likely to go the receiver route and really kind of like solidify that supporting cast for Anthony Richardson. And when you mentioned the German guides, Bernard Raymond, but when you initially said it, my instinct took me back to Moritz Boehringer. Remember him? Remember that guy?
Yeah. I was also worried that the Raymond one would turn out to be like Dutch or something, but it's sometimes stereotypes pay off. Yeah.
I mean, we're just reading the names, you know, like we know all the languages. All right. Seattle. I think 16. They're a team that they could probably use like another tackle opposite Charles Cross. I think that would make sense to me. Might have some local products, you know, either from Oregon State or Washington to help out that offensive line. But I think the offensive line, the draft board is so well set up for them to help get that solidified. It's hard for me to see it going another way.
There's only three players, in my opinion, that they could be looking at. I'll rank them least likely to most, in my opinion, but least likely of the three, but still in play. The Duke center guard, Barton. They I think, have a reason to take a guy like that, but I think they would prefer the two guys you hinted at, Fautanu, the Washington tackle guard, or Fuaga, the Oregon State. I would call him a guard, but he played right tackle for Oregon State and certainly dominated doing it. I worry a little bit about the short arms on such a tall guy, but Fuaga might be able to stick at right tackle and do it very well. And if he can, it's because he's an insane athlete. So maybe he has short reach, but maybe he's pulverizing people by just running into them really hard instead of reaching for them. I don't know. But those three guys, it has to be one of those three.
It's not going to be the sexiest first round pick for the Seahawks, but I think that's pretty like pragmatic of them. Jacksonville is a bit of a wild card to me, yes, though. You know, they lose Calvin Ridley this offseason. You kind of are in this pressure environment now where last year goes so bad, and yet you're opting to run it back. You're in year four with Trevor Lawrence. Like, you got to start getting some results. Like, you can't have losing to the Chiefs in the divisional round 2 years ago be like the high watermark of the Trevor Lawrence era. Yeah. So, the Jags, they definitely have needed some help. Let's see. I'd say corner would make a bit of sense. Offensive line would make some sense. The offensive line was pretty abysmal last year, and it'll be picked over at that point, but I think you could still get a good player there. But I've definitely seen some rumblings that, you know, receiver would definitely be in play for the Jags as well.
Indeed. So I believe I was trying to remember the name of that Jacksonville reporter. I believe it was Maya O'Brien, maybe. But anyway, there was, like we were talking about before, there was the link between the Jaguars and the 49ers. And if they're trading for Ayuk, that 17th pick is probably going to San Francisco. So if Ayuk does not go to the Jags, then 17 is either receiver or corner, I think, for the Jaguars. Maybe Kenyon Mitchell. Maybe I don't know what's going on at corner, I guess I should say. We just mentioned Terrion Arnold at 13 seems like a pretty solid bet. But between the Toledo guy, Quinyon Mitchell, the other Alabama corner, Kool-Aid McKinstry, and the Iowa, whatever, he's
Cooper DeJean.
Yeah, the latest Eric Weddle, Cooper DeJean. Like, I don't know where those guys are going, but the Jags need another corner. They might be content to go in the second or third round or whatever. I don't know if it's the first that they're looking, but one of those corners I think makes sense. And in recent days, it's come up more and more that there's apparently some concern in the NFL about both Adonai Mitchell, the Texas receiver, and Brian Thomas, the LSU one. So I think it's a great idea to get Trevor Lawrence, like a big receiver, and ideally with downfield speed, which, you know, Brian Thomas fits that bill almost. It's like a description of him, but I don't know if it's going to be those two receivers if those corners are there. So I'm guessing, but if they don't trade that 17th pick for Ayuk, I think it might end up being a corner instead of a receiver.
And I think the other corner named it to keep in mind might be Clemson's Nate Wiggins.
Oh yeah, you're right.
But you know, beyond that, corner definitely makes a lot of sense. You pair him alongside Tyson Campbell. I think you could see your way into a decent corner rotation. And yeah, corner will be less, or it'll be more full stocked at that point of the draft than offensive line will. So even though the offensive line still needs some fixing, I think you get the more of like the obvious immediate difference maker that plugs like a more immediate hole at corner. If you go that route and you're the Jaguars, and again, you are making that pick and not trading it to the Niners for one, Brandon Ayuk. On to the Bengals. They can definitely do like best player available. In my opinion, they could use some tight end help, but I don't think Bowers is falling that far. And I don't think that any other tight end is even remotely in this range. Maybe they're a trade back candidate. Maybe they are also a, no, they still have good edge.
I like corner.
I think corner would probably be the play for the Bengals.
Quinyon Mitchell, in-state product, or at least in-state enrollee. He might make sense there. Otherwise, yeah, Cooper DeJean, Nate Wiggins, Kool-Aid McKinstry, maybe. I think it's a boundary corner with a press skill set that the Bengals have a clear need for more than most positions.
So the next one, we have some like idea of draft tendencies over the last few years for pretty much every team in the NFL except this one, the Rams.
Yeah.
When was the last time they made a first round pick? Like I legitimately don't remember.
Torrey Holt. Pete Schrager was, and apparently he's like buddies with Sean McVay, I don't know, but he was saying, you guys got to trust me, they're taking an offensive player for sure. And his projection, this is a week ago, I want to say, was the Oklahoma tackle Tyler Guyton, which would be weird to me for several reasons. One, I don't think Guyton's worth any such pick. And the other is they have at left tackle Alaric Jackson, who started all of last year, and they gave him a second round restricted free agent tender as an undrafted player. Which is to say, that's normally a pretty reliable indication that the team values them quite a bit, or at least they were like, we can't let Jackson get away. So he's their left tackle. Their right tackle is the still highly paid, albeit aging, Rob Havenstein. So if they were taking Tyler Guyton or some tackle at the 19th pick, I think the Rams would be forcing themselves to cut Havenstein, which might, I guess it'd lower the salary of their offensive line, but does it make it better? Almost certainly not. So
no.
I don't think offensive tackle actually makes a whole lot of sense there. That doesn't mean anything. By the way, I don't understand the Rams draft picks ever, except Avila last year. I liked Avila a lot. And look how well that worked for them. Now that like converted Sean McVay into being an offensive line guy, is getting Avila and seeing what it meant for that offense to have Dotson and Avila just blowing up the middle every play. But now they're kind of set, especially after signing Jonah Jackson at left guard. So I think their offensive line is ready. I don't think any of the receivers here are a good scheme fit. I think if Brian Thomas were on the Rams, McVay would pretty much hate him, because McVay wants guys who run into the teeth of the defense over and over and take, just do that game with Stafford where they, you know, whoops, you left a 1 foot gap somewhere in the middle of the field, and you know, we found it. Thomas won't find that gap. He'll find post routes and fly routes just fine, but can't Tutu Atwell do that? I mean, what does he do if not that? I don't know. I think McVay is such a neurotic like stickler for punctuality. I don't think he would want any of the receivers on the board at this point. So I say they either trade back or corner or edge. I know Pete Schrager knows a hell of a lot more than me as far as you know, reporting goes, but I think it's going to be a defender for the Rams unless they trade out of the first round.
Their offense is set. I definitely understand. Like McVay, you know, it's like the old adage. Like if you get, I'm going to dance around that one. Never mind. But you know,
if Bowers falls to them, they'll take Bowers because that's something that, you know, that's a new thing that the offense doesn't have as a threat. But like you were getting at, it's like everything else is just roadblocks. It's like you're not starting a receiver that you pick. You're not starting an offensive lineman that you pick. Obviously, quarterback, you're behind Stafford. So I'd almost find Michael Penix more likely than an offensive lineman. But I think it's going to be like Jared Verse, the Florida State edge rusher. Maybe they trade back and take Jared Verse or Chop Robinson, the Penn State edge rusher. Maybe one of the corners interest them here. But I think defensive end, you know, the edge pass rusher is such a clear need for them. And it also is where the value is shaping up to be for their pick.
Yeah. Like they literally could be able, like outside of Dallas Turner, like they could have either Jared Verzi or Liatu Latu from UCLA. So like, I think that McVay can scream all he wants for more offensive help, but if the Rams,
you're just going to pick Tutu Atwell and Van Jefferson. Why do you even want to make the pick? Say if I'm Sean McVay, I'm like, please take my draft picks away.
I literally can't do this clear headedly. But defense, what the Rams need. All right, let's keep rocking through these last 12 picks. Steelers. I know you mocked a receiver to them. They lose Deontay Johnson. You think that's the direction they go?
Not now. I think Brian Thomas, in theory, works great for their offense, and particularly their offense. I don't know if there's any other type of offense that I like Brian Thomas that much for. And the reason it would work is specifically because they wouldn't put that much on him. They would let him be just a post route and fly route guy, and it would be okay because they're a two tight end offense anyway. However, I think Thomas and Mitchell, the other 6'2 guy from Texas, it's like they're just both going to slip to the late 20s. And this pick, I think, is Graham Barton, the Duke, or if Fautanu is somehow still on the board, or Fuaga, if he's somehow still on the board. But center is definitely a need for them, and that's why I think Barton for Duke makes a lot of sense.
All right, how about the Dolphins?
Defensive tackle, you were right to mention that Byron Murphy could well go ahead of this. If he's somehow still on the board when the Dolphins are up, then Byron Murphy, I think, makes a lot of sense. There's a lot of fans of Jerjon Newton, the Johnny Newton, many refer to him as the Illinois tackle. I don't know how to judge a guy like him. I think he clearly looks good, but a lot of people think he's a top 10 player in the draft, and it seems that either the hype about Murphy being a top 10 potential pick is false, or the Murphy hype is true and Newton is just not in the same tier as far as most teams see it. And the reason for that would be that Newton has been hurt all offseason, hasn't done any athletic testing. So as an undersized, short armed defensive tackle, ideally he would have athletic testing to kind of make the projection easier to do. But if Murphy's not on the board, then maybe Newton, you know, maybe the defensive tackle 3 is far enough back from Newton that it would still be a pretty easy pick for the Dolphins.
Yeah, I still can't believe they let Christian Wilkins get away. Like those people, like
quarterbacks
that,
don't matter. You keep Christian Wilkins and you let your system pop gun armed quarterback test the market. That's what you do, but they didn't. Ugh.
No, they got that one back asswards just a little bit. Eagles picking 22nd. You know that it's a very complete roster. So I think you know, again, best player available. Certainly applies to their draft plans. Defense, probably. I mean, could they be in line, you know, with Kelce having retired, you know, for Powers Johnson out of Oregon, something like that?
He's got that Oregon guy has a ton of internet hype. People love him. I don't know how much of it is the name, but
it is pretty good.
Yeah, it seems like the NFL, or at least I feel like Bob McGinn's sources were not quite as high on him. There's somebody, some other, I don't know if it was Brugler or somebody like that. Somebody though kind of threw some cold water on the Powers Johnson hype, and I don't know what there is to make of that. But at the very least, you see a lot of people in NFL media, NFL draft media, even talking about how Powers Johnson is going to be the first center. It's going to be Barton, the Duke guy. So that at the very least is something that I think we can take for granted there. Whether at 22, if Powers Johnson is the next guy up, maybe the Eagles are the team to take him. Maybe it's at 22. I feel like the Eagles just open and shut need corners. I think they need at least two corners because they're starting two corners. One's going to be 33 this year. The other's 30 or something like that, maybe 31. And they both got hurt last year. So, and Avante Maddox, the slot corner, got hurt last year. So the Eagles, you know, their formula requires a certain level of defensive prowess, and they just point blank do not have the ammo right now at corner. So I think Wiggins from Clemson makes a lot of sense. The issue with him is at around 173 pounds, he in theory would not be a great run presence, and some teams might put a lot of emphasis on that. I don't know if the Eagles are one of those teams, but be it Wiggins, Quinyon Mitchell, Kool-Aid McKinstry, sorry, who's that guy I forgot earlier, John, that you had to bring up? I can't remember. There's another. Oh, no, that was the guy you. Okay, so yeah, I'm not forgetting anyone then. Okay,
no, you got
Cooper DeJean, maybe. But yeah, I feel like it's got to be a corner at 22. The Eagles have surprisingly few needs. And this is actually a really deep center class. I mean, the Wisconsin guy, Bortolini, the Zach Frazier from Western Michigan, the Hunter Nuerzad from Penn State, all those guys look like starters to me, and they're projected more around the third round.
Right. So center, you know, is the least often drafted position off the offensive line in the first round. You got to be kind of like a Tyler Linderbaum type to be a center that's drafted that high. I think Barton is close-ish to that potentially, but you know, centers do tend to fall, and you know, there is a chance that the Eagles could just go ahead and address that later and go after a more premier defensive position first with their first round pick at 22. At 23, we expect Minnesota to probably have moved off of this pick one way or the other, so we'll just keep moving. Dallas, 24.
So they have a pretty clear need, I think, at tackle, and I think Amarius Mims from Georgia is the kind of guy they go after because Dallas prefers, in general, excuse me, but especially in the first round, the blue chip athletic metrics like Tyler Smith had coming out of Tulsa. And coming out of Tulsa, you might remember that there was a vocal critic section for Smith. It was like, he holds all the time, he's too sloppy. And Dallas sort of just, you know, looked at it instead as, this is a really young player who's way more athletic and huger and, you know, stronger than everybody. Let's just see if we can figure out how to teach him to block a little bit. And it worked out really well. So I think Mims at left tackle might be a lot like Tyler Smith was at guard coming out of Tulsa. Maybe it's a little raw at first. Maybe he's got work to do, but the flashes might carry them over to the point where like things get rounded out. And if things get rounded out, no one's going to ask, you know, what went right with Mims if he turns out to be a good player. It's going to be like, oh, the 6'8", 340 guy is way more athletic than a lot of the other tackles. Like, oh yeah, I guess that makes sense that he would be good.
Yeah, that's 340 pounds. It's in a package that doesn't look like what you normally expect 340 pounds to look like. There's not a lot of roles on one of Amarius Mims. 8 career starts, so a little green, but he did get into 30 games. I think that's like an important thing. Like he
also practiced at left tackle 40% of the time, he said. So he only played right tackle, and he didn't even play that very much, but you just at some level, you know, 6'8", 340, being the athlete that he is, having the reach that he does, the game is easier for players like him than the guys who, you know, are 30 pounds lighter, have 2 inches less reach in their wingspan, and then also are slower and weaker than him.
He's large and he's strong and pretty athletic. I think he's going to figure it out. And Dallas can you know, iron out the kinks as far as the skill stuff goes. And yeah, I really like that fit. Actually, now that you mention it, Packers, we're getting into the later part of the first round here on this podcast. They've kind of been able to moneyball their way into a legit receiving core that are all under contract for a while. So there might be a receiver that theoretically makes sense here, but like, why would you even mess with the formula at this point? So I think defensive side of the ball are trading back. You know, they could use some help at linebacker, but there isn't really a linebacker here that's worth picking. So I could see them putting this one up for sale and maybe even trading out of the first round.
Yeah, I think their needs are clearly in some order corner, linebacker, and guard tackle on offense. Not a true need. Like, they've got returning starters, but except for right guard, where I guess they either got to add someone or that UCLA third rounder from a couple years ago, Sean Ryan, that's what they're looking at. So I actually think the Packers, though, might trade up. I actually like them a lot to trade up to that 19th pick where the Rams are, especially if they can get an even higher, maybe even up to like 15 or 16, because I think the Packers would really like to get Fuaga, the Oregon State guy. If they could get him at right guard, that offensive line could go pretty crazy. And, you know, with Josh Jacobs there, that run game would be something nightmarish for defenses to have to deal with Fuaga. And they're solid across the board. Jenkins at left guard, the Ohio State guy that I always forget that they drafted in the second round at center. So they get a guy like Fuaga, that is a like final piece kind of pick, I think. And he's one of those guys that'll change the whole complexion of the offensive line. You know, I would call the guys that the Packers have now like a skilled, you know, effective bunch, but there's not someone terrifying on that line. And Fuaga at right guard would really make them tough. But yeah, I think guard or tackle, if Mims is there, they'd I think would be interested. But yeah, maybe Tyler Guyton, the one from Oklahoma, something like that. I don't think Fautanu would fall that far, but I think they'd love to get him. Something along those lines is the offensive line, I think, is the way I'm leaning.
All right, I've got them circled as a trade-up candidate, and I think the Rams is a really smart call as a potential dance partner there. On to the Bucks. I can see Jared Verzi, sliding to this point. I think they could use some edge help. I think he would make plenty of sense. They can't really go wrong. They somehow made the playoffs last year. It's kind of tough with that roster to be picking this far down in the first round, but I think that they are also like a best player available, because there's more than one need here when it comes to the Buccaneers. But I think edge value wise, the way that we have the board shaping up, I think Jared Verse would be a solid pick, assuming he's available, which I kind of do.
Yeah, him, Chop Robinson, I think both make a lot of sense as edge rushers in this range. Corner might be their most pressing need after the Carlton Davis trade and Jamel Dean kind of getting hurt a lot, struggling last year. So maybe a guy like Kool-Aid McKinstry from Alabama, if he falls this far, I think the Buccaneers might like him. Otherwise, I would have thought a week ago that if Adonai Mitchell or Brian Thomas were to fall this far, that they would be very tempting for the Buccaneers, because they gave like 700 snaps to Trey Palmer last year in the slot, and that's just not going to cut it. So
they need to get Rakeem Jarrett going, remember?
Yeah, I forgot about that. So all the more reason why they'll say ew, no thank you to Brian Thomas.
That's right.
They got a Rakeem Jarrett. But yeah, edge rusher
who
or
was
corner,
at one time committed to LSU. Fun fact.
Yeah, he was the next Stephon Diggs of the Maryland Pride.
Yeah, that was a huge get for Mike Locksley.
But I think, yeah, if they are not tempted by Mitchell or Thomas in the event that they fall, McKinstry just seems, especially since he's so, you know, 4-year starter, he's polished. Some of these other corners, you're projecting more so on the basis of physical tools. Whereas with McKinstry, it's like if you lost a starting corner, and you're looking for a new one and you just don't want the headache of having to replace that starter, it's like McKinstry at 26 might make some sense.
I like it. On to 27, Cardinals. Assuming they make this pick, what do you think they're doing with it?
So I would not hate it if they went receiver with both of their, if they went 4 and 27 at receiver. I think that kind of makes sense. As long as they're picking the right players, of course. My personal favorites is that's what makes the pick right or wrong. But so if Mitchell, if Adonai Mitchell or Brian Thomas fall to the Cardinals here, it might be pretty tough to pass on them. However, I also think it might be tough to pass on the defensive tackles in this range. Especially if Jerzon Newton is still on the board at this point, that might be tough to pass up. Chop Robinson would be tough to pass up. You know, like I was saying, they need some stars, but they could also use some developmental, like upside guys who could eventually become stars. Like Marvin Harrison is a star now. Yeah, go get him. But they also, the Cardinals are a team more than most that can afford to give a guy like Chop Robinson redshirt time if he needs it, or otherwise, you know, just keep his rookie year simple pass rushing specialist type stuff, because they don't need to force him on the field. So if Verzi, like you said, if he's there, that would make sense, even though he's more immediately ready than Chop Robinson. There's options that the Cardinals have, to the point that they might even trade back from there, because if the Raiders, for instance, are trying to trade up for Michael Penix, then the Cardinals to me seem like as good of a candidate as anybody to trade out of the first round to let that happen.
Yeah. So that could be where the Cardinals wheeling and dealing goes, and they stay put at 4, and then they move this pick, and in the event that someone wants to move into the first round, grab a quarterback, get that, you know, potential fifth year. Buffalo, yeah, the receiving core, it needs work, but yeah, there's some other things that need some work. So I mean, if let's say that one of AD Mitchell or Brian Thomas is off the board by this stage, so that they're pressed with that issue, or let's say they're both off the board. Let's say they both go in the top 27 picks. Would Buffalo kind of force it? Do you think that they would instead, you know, like feel that pressure and maybe decide to move up with the team like maybe Minnesota at 23 and make sure that they have one of these receivers, or it, you know, with the expected drop off at wide out after that first five or so, you know, what's Buffalo going to do?
Well, I'm kind of a bad person to ask this because I'm a bit of a Brandon Bean hater. I liked the Greg Rousseau pick, and that's pretty much it over the years. I just hate the players that he drafts. Linebackers aside, I guess that, you know, guys like that Tulane one looks pretty good. And did they draft Milano? I can't remember. Anyway, I hate the way Brandon Bean looks at the game and picks players. So if, in a certain universe, if Adonai Mitchell and Brian Thomas were both gone, I could see the Bills do, if we're looking specifically for things that I don't recommend them to do, I could see the Bills doing something like taking Xavier Legette at that pick, you know, so something.
Oh yeah.
Because one thing that Bean does is he goes into every offseason fixated on some kind of problem that he imagines needs fixing. And he believes like this is the thing that held us back last year, and as long as we fix it, then everything's great. And like last 2 years ago or whatever, he was like, we got to get a JD McKissick or a James Cook, you know, and then last year it's we got to get a whatever Travis Kelce. And that's what Dalton Kincaid is. I don't know. I think if we're applying the logic of chasing need and kind of like recent frustration being the source of the need, then wide receiver is it, be it on the basis of Diggs or Gabe Davis. So I guess Mitchell or Thomas, sorry, Ed and I, Mitchell from Texas or Brian Thomas from LSU, that would make enough sense. And I would like both of them a lot more than I would like Legette, but I can really see Legette being the pick if those guys are gone. Cause at the very least, I will admit Legette would be much better at the Gabe Davis role than Gabe Davis was, which is to say the sideline vertical route guy, right? Legette is fast enough to do it. Davis was not, but he can't do anything else, or at least I'm skeptical that he can.
Yeah, and like the super late breakout is what, 1 year of production. Like I'm not overly sold on Legette myself, but I could see, you know, if you put him in a position to do what he does well, maybe it ends up working out, and, you know, playing alongside Josh Allen, you know, could certainly aid things. And you know that whichever receiver
catches those bombs, he is good at that, and he'll fight for the ball in the air too. So
you get a guy that bigger, he has better numbers than neighbors, you know.
Yeah, you get if you get a guy like Leggett in single coverage with, you know, 60 yards downfield, Allen can just throw that up, as we've seen. So it in a weird way, that is, you know, that's the best offense for Leggett. I just still think it's a bad use of the pick if they take him there.
Well said. Lions, you know, what do you get the gift for someone that has everything? They just re-signed Sewell and Amon-Ra St. Brown on Wednesday. So, I mean, they've kind of got things moving in the right direction. Had obviously a legendary draft last season. You think they move out of this pick, or if they do, you know, what's something that they could add to in your mind?
I think they draft fairly pragmatically, so I could see them trading back if they're the team that the Raiders trade up for Penix, something like that wouldn't be shocking. But if the Lions stay at their pick, if Chop Robinson is still on the board, he's a tough player to pass up. I think Jerzon Newton, if he's somehow still there, that's a tough player to pass up. I could even see the Lions maybe being the team that this would be called a reach, but the Ohio State tackle Michael Hall, I think, might be able to crash the first 40 picks because he didn't play that much at Ohio State and he's very young. He was a top recruit. I think he doesn't turn 21 for something like another 4 months. So he might be raw there for, but he had really good reviews at the Senior Bowl, and Michael Hall skipped the combine testing, but he had a pro day workout at Ohio State that even if you apply the pro day penalty, we're still pretty crazy. Like he was given like a 4.75 or something like that at 299. So at worst, he's something like a 4.9 flat at about 300. And that number might improve as he, you know, gets past age 22, in which case he would be a high upside defensive tackle. Like he could be a total wrecker at some point. But corner is a need also. Offensive line on the interior needs to be addressed at some point. Maybe they take that Oregon guy, Powers Johnson. I don't know if he's still there. Maybe they'd be interested in him at center. They don't know if Frank Ragnow is going to play. And they lost Jonah Jackson in free agency. So maybe not in the first round, in part because in the second and third, there should still be plenty good center depth and guard depth. But that's the other thing they need to address at some point.
On to the Ravens.
Apparently this one's, I shouldn't speak too much on some other people's behalf, but it seems like a lot of the discussion around the Ravens is assuming that this pick will be Jordan Morgan, the Arizona tackle. He might be a guard. He certainly has a guard's frame and arm length, but played left tackle.
Either one.
Yeah, and he played left tackle at Arizona and had a good showing against Liatu. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if short arms or not, if you can hold up against a guy like Latu, then maybe he can just produce despite the limitation. I don't really know, but it looks like it's going to be Morgan, or at least that's kind of the assumption, is that he's going to go in the late first to somebody, and the Ravens are the you know, the first suspect.
Yeah, they lost 60% of their offensive line this offseason, and Ronnie Stanley is unfortunately terrible now, so they need to do something. They need to just take the best offensive lineman available that's not a center, because that's the only thing that's really spoken for. And anything else would be probably a mistake, unless like Kool-Aid McKinstry is somehow still available there. But offensive line, far and away, cornerback, depends on how the board shakes out. But I don't think that they'll be in the market for a receiver, even though I think they'll get one day two. All right, Super Bowl participants, the Niners and the Chiefs. Fire away.
The 49ers, I think, are somewhat positioned to take like the best available player, but especially if they were to trade Ayuk, you know, the need question all of a sudden changes quite a lot. And I don't know what their plan would be as far as replacing a player like him. I just pointless of me to even try to speculate. I just don't know. But if they're not, for some reason, chasing another, you know, receiver to replace Ayuk, then offensive tackle, I think, is kind of the biggest need for them, even though there might not be a player for the 49ers to pick here that would start right away. However, if in this scenario, John, if Tyler Guyton is still on the board from Oklahoma, that would be the pick, I think, because Guyton's issue, aside from being kind of just, he just looks kind of unrefined. He hasn't played the left side. He's super athletic, but he couldn't get on the field on the left side, including at Oklahoma, where he transferred to after starting out at TCU. At Oklahoma, Tyler Guyton played the right side while Walter Rouse or somebody played the left tackle position. So,
Sir Walter Raleigh.
Yes. So if Guyton, there's a possibility that, in other words, that Guyton just can't play left tackle in the NFL, even though he has the exact dimensions, height, weight, athleticism for it. I don't know what the hiccup would be. I don't know what the lag would be that would explain that. But even if he can only play right tackle, that would be fine for the 49ers because Colton McKivitz is not very good. But, you know, maybe Guyton can replace McKivitz now, and then when Trent Williams retires, move over to the left side and come through for them over there. I don't know.
I definitely understand the sentiment for getting the other bookend other than Trent Williams solidified a little bit further. I like that call. And then rounding it out, Chiefs, Super Bowl champs. I think they take the best receiver available. Maybe that's okay. Hack, but you know, if Rashee Rice is going to miss any time, and you know, I think. Even if Rashee Rice was guaranteed to play a full season this year, they need help there. They absolutely do. Like you can't have Justin Watson running a million.
John, Kadarius Toney is maybe our most talented receiver. We don't need we got Kadarius Toney. We got Justin Watson. So I don't know what, to be serious. I don't know what Brett Veach is going to do at receiver. I think, recent history, I guess, tells us that we were lucky to even get Rashee Rice out of him. They did take Sky Moore in the second round. That was just kind of a bust. But in any case, the theme has been somehow leaving Mahomes without much help at receiver the past 3 years, even though you'd think you'd want to give a guy like him some help just to maximize the best player in the game at his productive peak. But setting all that aside, the other concern to Mahomes is productivity. And I think is in a more pressing fashion at tackle. I don't know if the Chiefs are a candidate to re-sign Donovan Smith. That's who started at left tackle last year. But the only guy that they have at left tackle at the meantime is Wanya Morris, who they took at the end of the third round end of the third round last year out of Oklahoma. So he's a total question mark. He's not a bad prospect, but he's still very much.
He was a huge recruit coming out of high school.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I mean, he seems like a totally decent prospect, but just borderline fringe, you know, is one of those guys who, sure, add them to your roster, but when you find yourself depending on them all of a sudden, you might have screwed up something. So we'll see. Morris could very well take the step forward. I mean, they drafted him in the third round. They expected him to start at some point. The question is just how soon and do they still believe that, you know, whatever it is that they thought a year ago. But if we're talking offensive tackle for the Chiefs, and if a guy like Jordan Morgan is gone already, the pickings, and if particularly if Guyton is gone to the 49ers in the same scenario, I don't know how much is left on the board at that point. That would be a difficult spot, I think, for the Chiefs if they are hellbent on taking an offensive tackle. But I guess the next candidates up would be.
Do you think with the idea of it like being potentially developmental, even though it's the end of the first round, like Kingsley Seumaa?
I was just going to say, yeah. I think it might be him if they really do that. And I don't like that pick. What we can say about Seumaa Taia is he is super athletic. That's definitely true. I mean, he's a really densely built 6'5", 325 offensive tackle. Long enough arms. He's not like freakishly long reach or anything, but good enough. And you watch his tape. He's got natural talent with his hands too. Like he's just, this is going to sound like it's a derogatory thing or something, but he's good at playing patty cake. He's good at just kind of like slapping people's hands out of the way and stuff like that. And he just looks really comfortable doing it. But the whole look of the way he sets up so many of his blocks, especially 2 years ago when he played right tackle for BYU, it was rough looking. So he's a guy that I think might need a red shirt, but the tools are definitely there. And to be fair to him, last year was his first year playing left tackle. He's young for his experience level. So it's fair for a guy as toolsy as him to get a generous projection in terms of, you know, upside at the NFL level. Also, I guess he's Penei Sewell's cousin or something like that.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, if all those other guys, if Morgan's gone, Guyton's gone, that 32nd pick, or maybe in a trade back, it might have to, it might have to be Kingsley Suamataia that the Chiefs end up with as their left tackle plan.
I think that would be very practical of them to go that route. I don't think that Ladd McConkey's going to end up going in the first round.
No, I think he's worth it, but I don't see the need in the order of the picks working out.
No, I don't think that there's a dancing partner there. So just continuing to bolster the offensive line. Yeah, if you're not going to get him immediate help as far as guys to throw to, at least get some guys that can, you know, keep him upright. Then you can find some more guys for him to throw to. But anything else here, man? I think we covered some serious ground here. We ran through all 32 first round picks. Anything else?
Not really. I'm excited to see how it goes. I feel like we've all been getting pressure cooked with just like idle anxiety about the draft, the stupid draft the last 2 weeks, and I'm just want something to start happening.
Yeah, move it up next year. I think like the everything
at least two weeks. Oh my
like
god,
the cake's in the oven by like early April. You know,
yeah.
Do they not want to go up against Masters weekend? Like I don't know.
We had the bottle episode where we lost our sanity back in March. You know,
just right
to have the draft right after that.
Come on. But yeah, I'm excited. We got a big weekend ahead of us. Be sure to check out everything that we have over on rotowire.com. If you're not already signed up, check out rotowire.com/try. Get yourself that free trial. See everything that we have draft coverage wise. We'll be running articles all weekend long. We have a couple of NFL draft prop betting articles that are already up on the site as well. So get those under your fingernails there before the odds change and more information comes out. I wrote one of those. Please read it. What else is there? And we'll also have wall-to-wall coverage all weekend long of the NFL draft from the first pick to the 256th pick. You and I and the rest of our NFL crew and Joe Bartle and Dan Marcus, we're going to be rocking and rolling. I'll have a recap article of day one of the draft from a fantasy perspective. We'll have those for day two and day three as well from our guys Joe and from Jerry Donabedian as well. So ton of draft content to dig into here at RotoWire as we, you know, get this thing going and get the rookie class in. And start looking ahead to redraft season and best ball and all that good stuff the rest of the off season. But again, big thanks to our sponsors over at Prize Picks. Mario Puig, I'm John McKechnie. Thanks for listening.